The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Greetings, everyone. I'm delighted to be here with you, to share the Dharma with you, and to feel the vibes that are coming my way from your practice. I asked the tech team to put an announcement up in the chat that if you're interested, I do offer practice discussions, and you can contact me about that if you like. And I'd like to begin by correcting something that I said yesterday in the Q&A. In response to a beautiful question about how does one recover from trauma, and I spoke about my own experience from the trauma of being physically and psychologically violently abused when I was a child. And the path that I went on included lots and lots of psychotherapy and help, including analyzing my dreams and a lot of professional help. And then there was a lot of support, especially from Suzuki Roshi and the community of practitioners at the Zen monastery in Tassajara, where I cried every single Zazen period. I didn't make any noise, but the tears were just streaming. And this was a kind of, you know, a purification that I had to go through, and everyone was very sweet and accommodating and compassionate towards me. That was really helpful. And so, and then also in my case, since it was having to do with my parents, forgiveness became a big deal in letting go of trauma. So I think when I identified as a trauma victim, I was still bitter. And when I moved to being a trauma survivor, through the practice of forgiveness and understanding the sort of ancestral dimension of what we inherit, I was able to deeply forgive my parents, knowing that they did the best they could. And then in a practice discussion once, Gil helped me by suggesting that I just drop any identification with PTSD, with being a survivor, that it was not necessary for my identity. That was really helpful at that point in my practice. And then I mentioned that not all trauma comes from family history, as it was in my case, but I have a dear, beloved Dharma buddy named Francisco, who has become a marvelous teacher, who has shared a lot with me about the trauma that he went through in a devastating car accident, where he was just smashed to smithereens. And in the Q&A, I kind of tried to guess what his process might have been like, but I regret having said that because I didn't hear it from his own lips. So I'd rather let him tell you if you're interested in, you know, inventing what I think he might have been through. So forgive me for that. And then by request in the chat yesterday, for the list of the Pali words for, you know, what we're exploring this week, I'll talk about that today. And I need to give you a disclaimer that this is not a canonical list from the early Buddhist texts. It's one I put together for the purpose of teaching this week. And in addition, I add some of my own efforts at translating the terms into English. So, Monday was Rasa. And Rasa in both Pali and Sanskrit, the root does mean taste. So literally it means to taste. And then more figuratively, it's the flavor of our experience or the savor. And then a really interesting sort of development in where we can go with tasting is the second meaning of rasa, which is essence. You know, like in perfumes, it's sometimes the essence of such and such. But that essence also means essential function. So in a way, we're tasting our essential function as humans, our experience, our ability to be sentient beings. How does that taste? So that was Monday. Then Tuesday was Viveka, which literally means separated. It's usually translated as seclusion, but I think a preferable translation would be independence. It also can mean solitude, detachment, disengagement, and, interestingly, another meaning in Pali goes farther than that and takes viveka to also mean discrimination, understanding, true knowledge. So the Sanskrit root is very interesting also. The Pali root literally means separated. But the Sanskrit root means to sift, sort of like we're sifting grain or something. So the idea is having a clear sense of separation from the unwholesome. And according to the commentaries, it often implies seclusion from the hindrances. So a lot of times you may see, you know, once a monastic was secluded from the hindrances, at that point they could go deeper in meditation. But I've taken the liberty of broadening that idea of seclusion to, in the context of our meditation, to seclusion from distractions. How do we, you know, just it's really very powerful to be able to leave our distractions on the shoe rack outside the door and to stay present. And then yesterday we evoked viraga, which in Pali literally means away from desire. The fading of desire or something, or dispassion towards something, or detachment, or indifference. But the word raga in Pali also means color, hue, or a dye, like for dyeing cloth. And it might evoke the image of a blood stain on a pure white cloth that fades away by washing it and hanging it up in the sunlight. So we can take the stain to be a metaphor for the impurities of our mind, and the white cloth to be a metaphor for the purity, the innate purity of our mind, which we all have, but which we may not be experts at accessing. It's the treasure inside of us that all this work of meditation and mindfulness practice aims to reveal. But it's a beautiful image, I think, especially since the viraga fading away happens naturally. You know, wash it and let it dry in the sun. Healing through sunlight. So in Pali, it also goes farther than dispassion to also mean leaving aside infatuation or lust or passion. Like I said, there's often a whole spectrum of meanings for these dhammas, these Pali mind objects. And then today, and I see that the clock is ticking, the theme is Nirodha, which literally means without obstruction. And it's usually translated as cessation. Ending. Or termination, finishing, enfin. And both the Pali and the Sanskrit root are the same. It comes from rud, meaning obstruction. So the commentary says it also means release from imprisonment or confinement, being locked up. And in the Chinese agamas, translating the Pali texts into Chinese, the character given to represent Nirodha is stop and see. Two characters, stop and see, together. So that's the value of stopping. If we can stop long enough, we can see what our foibles are. We can see what our temptations are. And with that, we have the freedom to make a choice whether we want to go that way or maybe we want to just be peaceful. So, we stop long enough to be able to see what's happening with the clarity of an open, quiet, and steady mind. So tomorrow we will look at vosaga, meaning relinquishment. And the homework for today, if you're so inclined, is to stop from time to time to observe the mind and to see if there are any obstructions you need to remove from your path of practice so that you can continue on your wholesome journey to end suffering. Thank you. And a last announcement is that I learned just today that a revolution is happening in the Theravada forest tradition. Used to be called the Thai forest tradition, but now there's a kind of official new breakthrough, which is the I remember when I first moved back to California after living 40 years in France. It was a full moon night, and the first thing I did was drive up to Ubayagiri to meditate with the monks all night long in the moonlight. And at one point, the next day I had an opportunity to ask Ajahn Pasano a question, and I asked him, what's the problem with bhikkhuni or ordination? Why don't you monks here support that? So I was kind of indelicate on my part, which that's kind of who I am, stepping in the puddle. But he really got it, and he really replied beautifully, saying that the hierarchy of the lineage in Thailand is old guys, and they're unlikely to change, and so it will require, gradually they'll die and they'll be replaced by more moderate officials in the Thai forest tradition. So what's happening is that Ajahn Pasano has sort of been able to put in motion this revolution. And specifically what that means is that there's going to be a monastery in the Seattle area gathering around Ajahn's Nisabo and Covilo, and yes, including bhikkhunis, Anandabodhi, Santusika, and Chitananda. So I'm getting goosebumps telling you about it. I have so much mudita. And in the chat, there's the link. So excuse me for going over time. And if you're interested in joining the Q&A and you're watching from YouTube, you're welcome to transition over to Zoom. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Meg. So if anyone has any questions or comments, you can either put them in chat or you can raise your hand in Zoom. And while we're kind of waiting for people to collect their thoughts, there was a question on YouTube yesterday, and it asked, and the person asked, if you could touch on how to be in a contemplative mind skillfully without leaning into a ruminating inclination. So I don't know if you want to touch on that, Meg.
I tried to touch on that at the end of our discussion yesterday in the Q&A, I think. And okay. I think it's recorded. I mean, it's up there.
Okay, great.
But anyway, if not, I'll do it tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to switch to gallery way. Okay. Oh, these beautiful faces.
Hey, Marilyn, you can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay. Good morning from Charlottesville, Virginia. And I'm so happy about what you just said. So I just want to thank you for sharing that and bringing in all that other stuff, I guess. I don't know what to call it. but Yeah. My other comment was just to sort of say, like, I did really appreciate your sharing about how we transform our suffering and how much like that, you know, I just kind of had an insight yesterday when you were talking about how I guess the compassion for your parents comes in, and how like I have a similar experience that, you know, and I've never understood it before. Like, I used to feel so much pain, but now when I sort of think about that suffering, like, I'm overwhelmed by like compassion for the people who hurt me and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've never understood it. I've I'll be trying to explain it to people, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening to me now.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Marilyn. I'm crying. I actually was on a retreat with Gil in May at IRC, my first residential retreat in 3.5 years. And boy, was it wonderful to have that seclusion. And that sort of came to my mind because it at one point, Gil asked us to, he was doing a guided meditation, and he asked us to go into the place in our body where we identify as the self, where we reside. And for me, it was just right away the heart center, and I started crying. And it was amazing, because at Dasahara, I was, you know, when I was 21, I was crying out of pain, just raw pain. And that's a purification process that I had to go through. And this time at IRC, I was crying with compassion for my poor parents, who must have had an even more difficult childhood than I did. And so that transition from raw pain to compassion, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I just went through it myself. It's really amazing when it happens. And I think, you know, that's also part of the purification process. It's kind of like growing up into compassion from being angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that again, just, I'm so moved, and I will be, I mean, just be metabolizing this week. So thank you again.
Sure. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I guess we can also take this opportunity to thank our wonderful kind of like editor team that we've got that have kind of been stepping in this week. There's Demetra, Job, Julie, and Kevin H. They've been helping out this week. Like, Julie's been helping to post some of the announcements in chats, and everyone else has been kind of pitching in to help out with the audio editing for our guest teachers, and then the video editing for the YouTube videos. So thank you to the entire team.
You guys are really a crack team. You're not just amateurs. You're you know, you're pretty savvy about all this stuff. And I'm very grateful to you for what you've taught me about teaching on Zoom. So thank you.
Well, thank you. while we're waiting for it to see if anyone else has any other comments, it's kind of, I don't know if this would help anybody, but I actually, like, now that you kind of mentioned Francisco, I actually had the chance to talk to him once when we were doing a Zoom live stream, and we were talking about back pain. He was saying that I asked him, well, how did you get over yours? It sounds like 100 times worse than what I go through. And just kind of simply said, oh, I just meditated. So that was really cool to hear. Yeah. Oh, it sounds simple.
Yeah, that's sort of what I read into, you know. So what I guessed yesterday was probably accurate, but still, I didn't want to just leave it at that. Yeah. Yeah, he just went deep into his meditation. I think that's pretty safe to say. Okay.
Hey, Bill, you got the floor.
Thank you. Once in my entire Buddhist career, my mind got so still for an extended period of time, like 6.5 hours, that my back pain completely disappeared. Not a trace of it. So yeah. Only once, but now I know what's possible at least. But what I really raised my hand to say is hearing people talk about their imperfect upbringings and their imperfect parents. It's such a common story.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, true for me. So I had a little bit to overcome. Like 20 years of depression. very common. I hear it from other people all the time. Not all the time, but often enough. My reaction to that is just to look around me as I go through the world. And if I see people unhappy, realize what a common thing this is, and just kind of feel compassion for it. It makes it easier. Understanding this makes it easier for me to feel compassion for other people who may be acting up or not doing well in one way or another, and for their parents and their parents, you know, so the whole society, it's in a way, being happy and relating well to other people, it seems so simple. Just let go, man, just let go. But in practice, it does seem to be hard, doesn't it? So anyway, I just wanted to mention this way of relating to the world a little bit better because of understanding of what people have gone through.
Thank you so much for sharing that, dear Bill. And I remember, you know, I started practicing with a wonderful Zen master at the age of 21. Well, I'm 76. That looks like 55 years of practice. But, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, starting out in a way. And it's true. And you know, I can remember over the years thinking, you know, if almost every retreat I would go on, I would be so frustrated with myself because I know that I don't want to go down the river on that pleasure boat of thinking or planning or whatever. And yet it keeps coming back. And I just think, Meg, you know, anyway, for some of us, it takes a really long time.
Well, I've only been doing this 21, 22 years. So
yeah, that's pretty decent.
I got a late start. I didn't find the Dharma till age 48 or 9. Really late start. So there's hope for me, huh?
The Buddha, you know, he said there was hope for everybody. I mean, he gave Angulimala ordination, you know, so.
Yeah, yes.
he was the, for those of you who are not familiar, he was the this mass murderer at the time of the Buddha who wore a necklace of 999 fingers. because his goal, which was imposed upon him by his own spiritual teacher, was to kill 1,000 people in order to become enlightened. And he only had one person to go, and it was going to be the Buddha anyway. And instead of him being able to kill the Buddha the way he was able to overpower everybody else, whoever he came across, the Buddha got the best of him and then showered him with compassion and ordained him as his own disciple. If Angulimala can do it, so can. And he did become an arhat in his lifetime. So if Angulimala can do it, being that evil, we haven't killed 999 people. So there's hope for all of us.
Thank you.
There, Leila, you got your hand raised.
I'm curious about, because in the Vedanas, I find neutral to be such a powerful state. And I just wonder, is it similar to Nirodha? It's like a secession. I'm just curious, but I think it's under supported or under rated neutral.
And what's the rest of your mind like when you're in a neutral feeling tone?
Well, the whole state feels like, like a kind of relief. And this reminds me of Thich Nhat Hanh's celebration of I don't have a toothache.
Nice.
But it seems like, I don't know, I celebrate neutral. And I
think that's a great contribution to our discussion, because I may be wrong, but I don't remember reading anything like this in the canonical texts, that neutral Vedana was a good thing. It's usually in the commentarial tradition, it's usually strongly associated with delusion. And but I think that you're absolutely right. If in your case, it feels like a relief and you're not just escaping from going after pleasure or going away from pain, and you just don't know which way. I think that's a very positive way, an instructive way, that you found yourself to appreciate when you have neither pleasure nor pain. And congratulations, that's like becoming your own teacher,
Well, and I know, because I work with trauma with myself and with people, and the trauma is really big, and sometimes resourcing to access anything that might feel like pleasure just feels inaccessible. But to move from an overwhelmed trauma state to neutral is a doable movement. That actually offers something other than the vortex.
It's a door opener for you, and it's a valid door opener for you. And so this is something that we need to take from the Buddha's example also, is that it wasn't one teaching for everybody. It was a different teaching for each disciple and for each situation with that disciple. And in fact, at some point, it's really up to each of us to have the wisdom, the discernment, to be able to wisely know that this is a good thing. This is wholesome. And that's kind of what we were talking about yesterday with viraga, letting our unwholesome tendencies just kind of quietly fade away. And, you know, it sounds like your feeling tones of desire and aversion just sort of faded away, and you were left with a nice open door.
It's almost a gateway to equanimity.
Exactly. Exactly. Perfect. Well done. Thank you for asking that. Thank you for bringing that to the discussion.
Okay, I think we don't have anyone, we don't have anything, any other comments or questions in chat or.
Great.
So thank you for teaching today, Meg. And as we kind of sign off today, if anyone wants to come off mute and say goodbye or well wishes, please feel free to do so. Thank you, Meg.
And thank you, Kevin, and all the tech folks.
Yeah.
Really, really indebted to you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Meg.
Thank you. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for the question.
Thanks.
Stay
Thanks
nice.
So much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yes, thank you for that opportunity to converse.
Yeah, nice. I appreciate it too.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye. Bye.